Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are things in your world, in
things
Otto
are
land?
Good in Camelotto. Things are good. My kids, today is their first day of school.
Oh, do you have any stress getting them out?
No, you know, it just felt right. Seventh and eighth grade, brand new school, both of them, and it all felt right. And I definitely have a rooster this morning. I went down and took care of my chickens, and one of them is crowing.
Is that a bad thing? You got to get rid of him?
Yeah. Got to take that one back to the hatchery. I cannot have a rooster. It's not fair to my neighbors.
That's right. Unless you get a soundproof little coop.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll keep you posted on that. Lots going on. And I'm excited about our show today, Lee, for a couple of reasons. You know, we have put the spotlight on some non-for-profits in the Atlanta area before, but the show today is a little unique, very different non-for-profits, all three focusing on very different areas. And we're also going to hear a little bit more about Google Grants this morning. So if you're listening and you have a non-for-profit, we're going to tell you about the Google Grant program. So let's get started. Our first guest this morning, Bruce Patterson, is probably a little tired this morning. He's putting on a really big event tonight. Bruce Patterson is the founder of Save a Smile Foundation. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So, Bruce, where'd you come from? I mean, this foundation is a big undertaking, been around since 2008. What made you start it?
Well, I have a lot of passion about it, but I was always in businesses, you know, and they're easy to create, build, and I guess sell. And about a year, 16 months ago, my friend said, Bruce, why don't you do this foundation? And I was trying to maybe become a spokesperson for other foundations, and they said, do this foundation, and now I'm doing it. It's taken off very, very well. I've got a lot of new friends, and I didn't realize, though, I'm really kind of a fish out of water. This is something new, and I didn't realize how hard it was, and it's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. So we started it about 14, 15 months ago, and here we are now, and I'm just moving forward with it.
Can you share a little bit about what the Save a Smile Foundation does? Like, who are they helping?
Okay, we are helping right now Children's Hospital of Atlanta, as well as some families, and it's also the National Cleft Palate Association of America. This challenge is the largest birth defect in America, and it's the second behind a heart murmur. There's a couple of foundations that send their money to South America and to Indonesia, and I said, what about us? And we started it. Children's, you know, partnered up with me, and we're going to try to go national in a couple, 2 or 3 years. But it's a good foundation. We've started 2 or 3 other programs. You know, we've given most of our money, almost $100,000 has gone to different people in, like, less than, you know, 14 months. Nobody gets paid, and we're doing pretty well. And we did the first annual MBA speech therapy program kind of at Children's. And they were touching in the community about 1,700 people. And this is a Teach the Teacher program. So, you know, it's kind of like as a child grows and has the surgeries and their facial features change, so does their speech. And now we have reached 10,000, with this new program, Teach the Teacher, we are now out in the schools and other places, and we have touched 10,000 people.
Wow.
We've also, we did Camp Courage, which provides a camp for children to see that, hey, wow, we're all normal, we're all the same. So that's where we're at.
In 14 months, you certainly have done a lot, Bruce. That's amazing. So the organization is near and dear to your heart.
Yes, ma'am.
How have you gone about getting support from the community and from other folks and getting them excited to help out?
Well, I think we're doing it the old-fashioned way. We're just getting out and touching hands and kissing babies. But tonight we have an event for about 450 people. It'll be Carnival of Smiles. So I'm trying to keep it very participatory. And instead of going and paying a lot of money and eating the dried filet and the stringy green beans and looking at everybody and doing the solid auction and the next day talking about everybody, we're doing this. It's going to be $25 for all the food and booze and drinks you could eat. And we have a carnival set up like the old days where it's nostalgic. And throw a little ping pong ball in the fish bowl, and you carry a goldfish home. I'll be in a dunk tank tonight, and we'll have mimes and jugglers, and it's children friendly. So we're doing that. We've had a few good events just to get awareness about the cause as well as the foundation. And then every month we have an event building up to November 18th and 19th, and we'll have two parties for about 350 to 250 people. Then I got the 2009 Atlanta Showcase, Atlanta Holiday Home, and we'll run 25,000 people through there in 4 weeks. Wow. And then after that, we'll go out and start trying to get grants. And then, you know, I want to go national. I was born with a cleft lip, and nobody really knew it, and I had to listen to all the things. I couldn't even talk about it until I'm 40. I know you can't see me out there, but I look like I'm about 38.
That's right. Can I say, wait, you're 40, Bruce?
Yeah, well, yeah, so not really. I'm about 50, but it's very close to my heart. And I just want to basically go to the next step. Maybe like Susan Komen did with Gerber. I'm going to get those people behind me, Kids or Us or some other national sponsors, Levi or whatever, and then start doing having chapters in other states. And this is going to take a lot of work. I want to do a starter kit for the rural hospitals.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about what your experience has been? You've been a business owner for many years, and, you know, you've had successful restaurants and everything, and now you got into this nonprofit world. What has it been just a different animal, or is it the similar lessons learned, or how's it been?
It's a different animal. I used to have 585 employees and a wholesale food distributor. It was the 23rd largest in the country, and I did, you know, Atlanta Wildflowers years ago and built properties and built strip malls and had five or six restaurants. I used to own Spice restaurants. So when I sold Spice, I'm going, okay, God, I've already retired and got bored. You
right.
can only fish and golf so much, and all your friends are working, so you're not really playing golf. This is, you know, volunteers. And everybody goes in with good intent, and the next thing you know, like, you know, I was running around all day yesterday. I'm getting ready to run. I've already loaded two trucks and dropped right. off stuff and been to Home Depot. Well, you know, been to places today. So this is very good. You find out the road doesn't always run both ways. Mm-hmm. That's the humbling, hurtful area. You know, people have used your, you know, beach houses and boats and cars or whatever. Now, some of them aren't around, but a lot of them are. And right. then you meet wonderful people that come out of the woodwork you never knew, like right here today.
Right.
And you meet a new group of friends, and that's very rewarding. And then when you see the work we do, and then some of the families that come into the hospital at Choa and Henrietta Eggleston and
what was that like the first time you made a donation to help a child and then they had the surgery and you saw them after? What was that? Must have been so special for you.
That is very special. Unfortunately, and I'm trying to keep it positive, but you see these families come into these hospitals and they're like a deer in headlights.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you see them leave and they go in the waiting room and you see they see familiar families with the same challenges, and then they leave and they see a group of doctors like at Choa, and that group could be the same group for 18 years, because the average child goes through 18 surgeries for their 18. The average family spends $250,000 for their 18, and a lot of it's, is it cosmetic or is it corrective? So there's always a fight for the thing. One thing, when I came up, you know, I didn't know it could be hereditary, and it is. Mm-hmm. I didn't have pictures on the walls at my house, you know, boom, boom, boom. So there might be some more emotional scars, too, like intimacy issues, because maybe I was pushed away.
Right.
And then one other thing is that, you know, I had to go to the speech therapist here. I had to go to the orthodontist here, the dentist here, the surgeon here. And here we're trying to create – we are creating a one-stop shop, and it's a great – it's great. I mean, mm-hmm. you can get teary-eyed talking about it.
Uh-huh. And Children's Healthcare of Atlanta does have all those resources in one. It seems like they work collaboratively. You don't have to go someplace else to the orthodontist, and it's not all disjointed. Talk a little bit about your experience working with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. I know you plan on taking this to other markets and right. other areas of the country. What a great model to build from. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, the people there are so welcoming, warming. It's not like, you know, there's good car mechanics and then there's warm car mechanics. Children's is just like a family. It's amazing the help I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
I've used their 501(c)(3) until I got mine. And
cool.
They are just, they're so easy to work with. And that's kind of what I want to do next is do the starter kits. So I call them starter kit or courage kits. And I want to get a book. I want to have three books or some illustrated children's books like Lippy the Lion, Brucey the Bear, mm-hmm. Buck the Broken-billed Duck, like the Ugly Duckling. And I want to go and try to get, you know, some national sponsors. But imagine this. Let's say we're out in Dothan, Alabama, or a rural area in the southeast. And all of a sudden, somebody has it, and I've had friends lately that Googled, and they actually Googled me, and they didn't know I was doing this. And then I had to call them and talk to them on the phone, and I send them to children. So imagine a family in Dothan, all of a sudden they have this, they don't know what's going on, they're scared, you know, they start arguing about whose fault it is.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the next day they get a box. And in this box could have the illustrated children book, how-to from the family, a stuffed animal, right. Maybe a gift certificate at one of the hotels near Children's Hospital in Atlanta. And then they have gas money, and they might have some formula. They might have the feeding. But the child doesn't cry because it's hurting. The child is crying because it's hungry and it can't suck. And then there's some mm-hmm. devices you can put in the roof of the mouth to slow that down. And there's some formula in there. Here's some feeding bottles. And wow. You know, they yeah. say other people out there, that's my next step.
Right. And I mean, that could change their lives.
Absolutely.
It will change their lives.
Right. It's like a hug in a box, Bruce.
Exactly right.
Everything they need and everything to make them feel better right there. What a great idea.
So we're going to do that next.
Wow. You've got a lot ahead of you.
Well, I sure
busy
do.
Guy now. Now you don't have time for fishing and golf, do you?
No, but it's okay. And nobody in my organization gets a salary. Nobody's got a salary. I mean, I've never spent so much money and worked so hard for free.
But it's for such a great cause.
Oh, it's
Bruce.
Wonderful.
Save a Smile Foundation. Let us know your website, too, in case anybody's interested in the event this evening.
Okay, it's saveasmilefoundation.org. Okay, the saveasmilefoundation.org. It's all the information about our past events, where we're kind of going, the event tonight. And then you can also look at the Atlanta Holiday House. .com. That's for future and for the tour homes and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Now, the event tonight is the carnival event?
Carnival Smiles.
And where is that at?
That's at the actual house. There'll be 400 people there. Uh-huh. I'll be in the dunk tank, get $5 and get to dunk me in the tank. And we have some other celebrities there and some.
Is that
I'm not a celebrity.
Is that sold out? Is that an event sold out? Or
you can pay cat. You can come at the door and pay $25 for a ticket and all the food and drinks you can eat and drink.
Wow.
Sounds like a great event.
It's going to be fun.
Sounds
going to
like
be
a
fun.
Great event. Wonderful. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us today and for all that you're doing for the community and to create awareness for Save a Smile. Thank you.
No, thank you guys. Thank you very much.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit. Our next non-for-profit, Cancer Quest. We're anxious to hear all about it. And from Cancer Quest, we have the director, Greg Orloff. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So Cancer Quest is, fill us in.
So, I was a professor in the biology department at Emory. And in 1998, my wife, at the age of 39 or so, went for her baseline mammogram. And they said it didn't look right. And long story short, she ended up having invasive breast cancer. And she's fine now. So I'll say that up front. She's good. But when she went through the process, you know, the surgery and radiation and all the things, she went to a support group, and I became aware of the need for information. The patients didn't understand the disease, didn't understand the treatments. And so I started working, because I'm biology type, so I started working on a website to teach people, to empower people. About cancer, because if you don't understand it, you can't ask the right questions, and you're not going to necessarily get the best treatment then. And so I started working on that, and it's grown. I have lots of volunteers echoing his sentiments. I have students at Emory that work with me, lots of them. One of my employees actually was treated for cancer at Eggleston. And he's now gone on to a PA school. He wants to be a pediatric oncology PA.
Wow.
So anyway, that was sort of the inspiration. But because I'm at Emory, I have connections to other faculty and mm-hmm. who have been very generous with their time and resources. And so our site is now available in English, Spanish, two different forms of Chinese, Russian, Italian, through some international collaborations. Again, mostly volunteer in China, volunteer in Italy, volunteer in Russia.
And so what do they have to do in the different countries? How do they take you the kind of the guts of your site and modify it?
So all of the editing, all of the website is cancerquest.org. What we do is all the editing is done online. Everything is web-based.
Sure.
And so we'll just send them files. They translate it, get it back to us, and we pop it up. And we sort of have a workflow. It's pretty straightforward.
So it's really designed to provide reliable information for cancer survivors or those recently diagnosed?
So it's broad. I mean, last night I was meeting with the people from the Georgia Core, which is interested in clinical oncology trials, clinical trials. Mm-hmm. So we educate everyone from students. We have curriculum on our site that's downloadable for skin cancer, cervical cancer, some of the more preventable cancers.
Right.
We have posters that we send out that are really geared for younger kind of audiences. They have 3D graphics and things for young people. But of course, the heart of it, the reason I started it, was for patients. And so we have a lot of information for patients, the treatments and the side effects and how the side effects are treated and all those things.
And I would imagine being affiliated with Emory, you're always on top of things. And with the internet, it's so easy to be misinformed. You know, that's the first thing we do when we're diagnosed with someone.
Or over-informed.
Or over-informed, exactly. Yeah. You have so much information, you don't know what is true and where to go. And it's great to have a source.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big motivation, is that unfortunately, the internet's a huge place. Well, it's good, but unfortunately, there are people out there that will prey on people who have diseases and take advantage of them, in particular, life-threatening disease like cancer. So there's a lot of charlatans, we'll say, that are willing to sort of cash in on the hope and fear associated with cancer. So all of our information, I am very, very meticulous about it and make sure that it's referenced and people see where it came from, because there are those people that will do that, sort of take advantage of it.
How do you deal with, like, not the charlatans per se, but just people who have alternative therapies that are maybe, not conventional?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's complementary and alternative medicines.
So you deal with that on the site, like you educate?
We have a section on that. If it seems like the thing, if there's data, if there's information, people are actually looking into it, then we'll put it up there.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, we'll say, hey, it's not, like shark cartilage, for instance.
Right.
People think, oh, you know, you eat shark cartilage, your cancer goes
away. Because
they
don't have cancer or something, right?
Right, which is wrong. Of course, they get cancer.
Right.
I mean, people don't look at them that much. You don't ever see really shark oncology.
Exactly.
We have stuff like that on the site. And then there are some promising new complementary treatments like curry, for instance, which is being researched at Emory very heavily as an anti-cancer agent. There's an ingredient in curry, or green tea.
What about fish oil seems to be popular? Does that impact cancer at all?
I mean, the fish oil data that I've seen is mostly cardiovascular. I've not seen anything about
cancer
specifically.
Right. But curry and green tea.
Yeah, there's something in curry that's actually what makes curry yellow. You know, curry stains so much. If you've ever eaten curry, right, it can't get it off, right? So it's that yellow color is a chemical called curcumin. And curcumin seems to have very good anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and there's a lot of research going on at Emory, but elsewhere. I mean, not internationally. So I think people are going to take these supplements. People are looking for something. And so we try to provide the most reliable information. If there's no information about something, but we know people are still taking it, we still have it on the site. And we just say, this is what it's supposed to do. However,
we don't have any
information. There's no information.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so,
right.
So people can make a decision about what they want to do.
So it's kind of a clearinghouse of this kind of information that's what you're trying to build?
Yeah, I mean, we have, now we're working on we do a lot of videos and a lot of animations, because I think that's a great way to relay information to the lay population.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have database, you could search and find a lot of these things, but that's not our long-term goal, is to be sort of a big database. It's more we want to be the go-to place for people to validate information, mm-hmm. to get current information.
But how is that different, reliable. Like, than the American Cancer Society?
So, well, I mean, we're actually working with them. Uh-huh. So we have a contract with the American Cancer Society, and we're producing multimedia content for their website.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
So that's more the direction we're heading, is this sort of integrated animation, video. Mm-hmm. That's,
but yeah. It's all, you're getting kind of this vetted information. That's
absolutely, right. Yeah. I mean, ACS does have stuff, a lot of information, of course. You know, cancer.org is their site. It's probably number one if you go and Google cancer. So they do have a lot of information, but in fact, they don't necessarily have references like we do.
Right.
Or sure. Things like
that. Because that's your strong suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to touch on the Google Grant, because you were actually nominated for the show by the folks from Google Grants. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and how it's worked for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Bless them. So actually, one of my employees brought the Google Grant program to my attention. It was relatively new at the time. So we got our grant in 2007, and Google gives us ads. Okay, so when you search on Google, you get ads on the side or on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And we get, that costs money. And so Google gives us the money, essentially, so it gives us free advertising. So we've had the grant.
So they give you the ad, and then they let you keep any revenue?
No. Instead of us paying, I'm sorry, I was unclear. Instead of us paying to advertise,
right.
So as a retailer or something,
right.
Google gives us the free ads.
Okay.
That, so then
that's clear.
Yeah, that's clear.
And then so that goes back to your website.
Right. So we create the ads ourselves. We write them. We choose the keywords. We mm-hmm. design essentially an ad campaign, just like you would if you were trying to sell a car.
Except you don't have to pay.
Except don't pay, and there's no product other than knowledge hopefully power. We do actually give away some things through the Google ads.
Mm-hmm.
So we give away, for instance, these posters I mentioned, is 3D posters. You know, you put on the glasses and it pops out at you.
Right.
For skin cancer, cervical cancer, mm-hmm. things like that. And because of the Google grant, we have had this ad now, you know, up, and we send things internationally. I mean, we've sent them to Gambia,
wow.
to all over the UK, the US, mm-hmm. Europe, Australia. So, and pretty much Google made that possible. So
now, is this something where they give you an unlimited budget, or do you have so many dollars to spend every month?
Yeah. So we have a budget. It's mm-hmm. We have $10,000 a month.
Wow.
So
it's a big budget.
A pretty big budget. Yeah.
Which is $10,000 more than I had,
right.
as we talked about nonprofit funding, right? So Google has given us $200,000. Over
right.
$200,000 since it started, because it's been about 20 months, $10,000
mm-hmm.
a month.
Right.
And in that time, because of Google, probably one-third to one-half of our visits are through the AdWords. We've gotten over 300,000, plus or minus 300,000 visits.
Wow.
From Google.
Have you translated that even one step further to donations?
We do have an ad group that has donations. It's not possible for me to know exactly where they came from after they donate. But we have gotten some donations.
Wow.
Never get what you want, but yeah. or need.
But
absolutely.
Amount of awareness just
powerful.
Is amazing.
And even if you just talk about awareness as visibility,
mm-hmm.
our name has been up, right? Even if someone didn't click.
Right, they still see it.
They
see it and recognize it.
So our name has been up 2 million times.
Wow.
So Google calls that impressions. How many times does it get thrown up on a search page?
Right.
And it's been 2 million. So Google has funded, to my knowledge, about 5,500 nonprofits through this Google Grants program, and they've given over $400 million.
Worth of
advertising.
Man, that's very generous of them.
And,
I mean, it's
really
something
is.
That it's easy for them to facilitate, but it's still very generous that they do it.
Yeah. And in fact, when we first signed up, I'm not a business person at all. I'd never dealt with that.
Right.
And so we'll say, how do you make an ad campaign?
Right.
How do you do that? And the answer is they did it for us.
Right. They do have the tools.
They did it, but it was pre-built. I mean, they said, okay, you're our recipient, log in. And we logged in, and there was a campaign that they had already chosen keywords for us and built ads.
Terrific.
Which we've modified, of course, and built on, but it was incredible. I mean, and in addition to sort of the international awareness, the, you know, the ability of us to get our information out, the posters and stuff out, curriculum, we send out CDs with, you know, middle school curriculum across the globe because of these ads. And but in addition to that, we've learned based on who clicks on the ads and which ads are getting activity, because Google, of course, being exceptionally smart, the ads that get clicks get shown more. It evolves, right? It's a smart program. And so what we've been able to do is actually sculpt the content of our site, because now we know these are the kind of things that people are really interested in
and where they click.
And clicking on, and this is the kind of ad that drives someone to, you know, we just made a new section actually on animal cancer.
Because there was an interest.
Because there was obviously an interest in this. Yeah. And so now we
And then that was never on your radar, right? You didn't even consider that.
Wasn't going to happen, right? I mean, I had a dog that died of osteosarcoma, so I know dogs can get cancer.
Right, and it still wasn't on your radar.
It still wasn't going to be something I was going to, but I realized, hey, there's a real need for this because you can look and see. And so now we have cat cancer. We have actually a section on shark cancer to sort of display the myth.
That's smart. That's a good plan.
So again, the website is for Cancer Quest.
Yeah, it's www.cancerquest, all one word, .org.
And there's so much information. It's amazingly, I don't know if you visited the site, but given my background in diagnostic testing.
Oh, you must have loved that.
Oh, I did love it. I could have spent a long time just clicking from you know, menu to menu, and a lot of incredible educational resources for folks. So we hope they'll reach out and check out your website. And if they're interested in supporting, I'm sure there's an opportunity to support your foundation as well. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
A lot of great information, Greg, and thanks for sharing with us about Google Grants. Our next guest, Lee, is someone that also came to us from Google Grants, and you know, very different type non-for-profit. A lot of times people think that non-for-profits are medical-related. This one is not. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Mary Dykes.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We are anxious to hear all about the Owens Foundation for Wildlife Conservation. Tell us about it.
We're a 501c3 based by Dr. Delia and Mark Owens to facilitate wildlife conservation, wildlife research, and then evolved into assisting rural communities with improved quality of life to support the wildlife near them. Many wildlife, well, the major challenge to wildlife conservation today is human encroachment. The needs of people versus the needs of wildlife. So our projects go in and assist. For example, our core project right now is in Zambia, northern Zambia in south central Africa, where rural people are living below $1 a day. I always kind of laugh at that statistic, thinking how wealthy the people in our villages would be if they had $1 a day. And we start with sustainable business, agriculture, and the businesses are all self-contained. They do not require any outside input or very little outside input. Rural health and education. Okay. And these programs have stabilized villages that were being run by commercial poachers. Big cartels. It's like the drug trade. They come in from outside of the area and force these people to poach for them, to be carriers. Children are pulled out of school as early as 10 years of age to carry meat and ivory out of the park. In 1986, when Dr. Delia and Mark Owens entered North Luangwa to start their research on lions, they found that 1,000 elephants a year were being killed by poachers. Cartel groups of 140 poachers strong were coming into the park with bicycles and just shoot, and carry out the ivory and the meat. They started these village programs just in desperation, and by 1994, not one elephant was killed or found dead in North Luangwa. As of today, some 23 years later, the villages are secure. You drive into one of our villages and you are struck by the prosperity. You drive into the villages that haven't received our support, and they're just falling over thatched houses and poverty of the worst type. You come into ours and there's commerce. There's sustainability. There's environmental consciousness. All of these programs that we provide to the people are based on a loan program. It's not a giveaway. You can't give anyone anything. Africa is littered with the carcasses of big equipment given by USAID that just that can't be supported. So all of this is grassroots, done on a loan program, run by the head men of the village and the people in the village that have the most savvy and ability to influence their folks. And it works. It's a model for rural development across the world. Microfinance, I think.
Right,
they're called.
Micro lending, right?
Yeah.
That's now. Were you involved in the micro lending at the earliest stages? Because that's relatively new, right?
Yes, this was in the late '80s, early '90s, and I'd never heard of it before.
Right.
And more and more. In fact, our project has become a model in Zambia. And I get on the internet, and people email me, and they've started up. They said, we followed that, and now we're going to start it in our area.
Right, because you don't need a lot of money to start it, because that's in essence these are micro loans, so they're not. How much money? What are you talking about? Like, what could a loan be, for example?
A loan for a Yingi oil press. We taught the people. One of the main things that people traded meat and ivory for was for cooking oil. If you live in rural Africa where there's no refrigeration and you don't have a source of fat in your diet, it gets pretty dicey. There's no butter.
Right.
So cooking oil is incredibly
important.
So
Paula Deen isn't big there.
That's right. I would imagine,
So we taught them to grow sunflowers. That gives the farmer a job. Mm-hmm. We taught the sunflower to sell his seed to the press man. He has a job. The seed man sells the leftover byproduct of the oil pressing to the fish farmer, and he feeds that to his fish. The oil is sold or bartered. We thought this would be a barter economy, but it turned cash very quickly.
Really?
Delia Owen said suddenly there was kwacha. That's the Zambian. That's the Zambian currency was everywhere. So it's this everybody. It's a system. And Delia and Mark Owens were so bright in seeing the need, finding the grassroots simple answers to their problems that were sustainable and environmentally sound. We work with the – it's so funny to go to a village meeting and have them talking in Bemba about farming, and every other word is fertilizer. You know, fertilizer.
And understand that part, right?
Yes, we don't use any chemical fertilizers. Everything's done with green composting. There are even plants that they grow for pesticides, and you crush up the bean pods and put it in some water and spray it on your plants. We're using chili powder. This is something that Ian Douglas Hamilton established in his elephant conservation work to deter elephant predation on crops. You either plant the chili plants around your crop, or you can just run a real thin string and soak it in ground chili pepper and a little diesel oil. Some farmers use chili bombs, where they make these chili bombs and a little bit of diesel, and when the elephants come, they set them off. And one of the funniest stories, when the first elephant came around one of our, as the elephants are recovering, came around one of these maize fields, he got a big mouthful of chili and ran screaming for 3 kilometers, and the whole herd
was a
matriarchal group. So our beekeeping is designed to provide honey and beeswax where they can create candles for the village. But the bees are located near the crops, and if the elephants come, the infrasound of the elephants irritates the colony, and they chase the bees away, stinging their ears. So it's this
works.
But was this something that was planned, like, from the top down, or was it more from the bottom up?
The whole thing has been learn as you go. Somebody set a computer in front of me when I was in 1990, my nephew, who was 15, and said, okay, type. And I kept hitting the carriage return. And he said, Aunt Mary, you don't have to do that. It wraps the text. And I remember thinking, what is he talking about?
Oh, how funny.
When a young man called me in 1995 and said, you're not on the Internet. And I said, you know, I really don't understand the Internet. And my husband works in the computer industry, and he says we can't afford a web page? And this young man built our web page. And if you visit our site, owens-foundation.org, you'll see he did a lovely job, and he paid for it for 2 years. So it's that sort of learning curve. Mark and Delia just started by hiring the local women to cut thatch for the huts they were building for themselves for their camp.
But how did they determine the direction, like to do the sunflowers and then do the bees? And, like, is it just evolved from necessity?
Yes. And looking for the – they would sit down with the head men in each new village and say, what do you need? What is the biggest need in your village? And Delia and Mark are just spectacularly smart. They always amaze me with the breadth of their knowledge, and they're not, you know, I kind of expected earth shoes and the, you know, unkept when I met them, and they're just real multidimensional, and they're just smart. And when they saw how well it worked paying the local women, we focus on 68% of the people who receive loans from us are women, mm-hmm. because the men are more transient. They are likely to die, more likely to die from AIDS. They have multiple families. The women are the base.
They're consistent.
We have a wonderful man named Hammer Simwinga, who is a Zambian. He is one of the miracles on earth. He's smart. He's dedicated. He's altruistic. He can communicate with anyone. And he goes into these villages, and the women have nothing. They were chattel. And they start called capacity building. And they will put in 50 cents a piece and form a bank. And from that, it's just grown and grown and grown until one of these women emailed me. There's an internet cafe in Impica, Zambia. And if that's not enough to blow your mind, if you've ever seen Impica, mm-hmm. which is a little dusty crossroads. And I get emails now from the villagers, and they said, you know, we've saved $500,
wow.
and we want to buy a Yinky press. Can you help us with the transportation?
That, how incredible, Lee.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. The microloans have really changed. They're going to change the world.
Yes, one step at a time.
Right.
What's going on in North America?
We're working with grizzly bears in the Pacific Northwest. That sort of evolved in an odd way. I know that seems like a strange dichotomy. Mark and Delia returned to the United States in 1997 to seek medical treatment. Basically, they have some real problems with persistent parasites, and to write up their elephant research, and had their project running well in Zambia. And the local conservationists didn't take 2 minutes. Mark and Dave have written 3 books that are very widely read to say, guess who moved into town and came asking for help.
Uh-huh.
So at first, we assisted the Idaho Fish and Game with their, you know, their entire budget, as I recall, in the mid-90s was $9,000 for endangered species.
Yeah, do microloans work in that area?
We haven't gotten that far, but you would be amazed that the exact same problems we encountered in Zambia we encountered in North America.
Right.
So we're working with local people in an education way, but we're also focusing now that Idaho Fish and Game has established their needs to work with education and poaching prevention, which is a big problem with grizzly bears, is habitat protection, because as we said, human encroachment is the number one problem for wildlife everywhere.
Right.
So we're working to match conservation buyers with private property sellers,
mm-hmm.
to build corridors to allow transfer of genetic material between isolated grizzly bear populations around the Northwest, and to protect important habitat. Not all habitat's quite that important to protect, but when you have someone who's selling really prime property that's habitat for grizzly bears currently, you want to keep that protected from subdivision and so forth.
Right.
So we're working with that. That's really slow, but occasionally we make it work, and a nice chunk of 20 acres is protected, or we've participated in a project that has protected 6,000 acres. So
wow.
That's what we do.
Busy, busy, busy.
Yes, and with no formal training, I might add. That music degree has been not at all helpful.
Really? Didn't count on that?
No.
Now, can you talk about your relationship with the Google grant program?
Yes, an employee of Google. I didn't know anything about it. People are saying, why don't you do this? Oh, this is a good idea. And I said, I have enough on my desk.
How about you do that?
I don't get that far down. But a Google employee recommended us and contacted me and facilitated. And
so they found you, and they said, hey, you would benefit from us helping you.
Yes,
so get out of our way.
And my husband,
let us help you.
And my husband works for IBM. His eyes just, he's our volunteer webmaster, and he just went, yes, let's do that.
Right.
So we put it together and have the same story.
Is it a similar relationship where they give you so much money a month?
Yes, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And they have this wonderful facilitative program where you just go, ooh, I like that one. Let's do it that way. And anytime someone searches on the AdWords, they call them, primary words that are associated with our mission, wildlife conservation, endangered species, Africa, et cetera, our website ad pops up. And we've increased our web traffic, our visitors per month, from 5,000, we are a very small group, to 20,000.
Wow. In what period of time?
Overnight. It was amazing.
Literally.
I know, and my husband was so excited about this whole thing. He was just like,
when
a kid
did you
a
get the grant?
In 2007, March 2007.
Right.
And he said, come and look at this. You know, he has a little program that monitors our web activity, and he's just printing off graphs and just.
He's like, how is this happening?
Oh, right. No kidding. What a fabulous
program. The fascinating
thing
about it to me was the increase in traffic we had from India, Pakistan, that region of the world, and North Africa, Egypt. And people contacting me both for jobs, for scholarships, want to help. How can I save the wildlife in my area?
That's so nice.
A gentleman working on the White Nile, very concerned about migratory birds being shot for food. And I've helped him contact people in his country to get started on his project. So it's great.
So if anybody's traveling to Africa or any of these countries, you're a good resource, huh?
We are, and we have a lot of education material on our – and if you're going on safari, you can visit our site. Please go to Zambia because your conservation dollars – your trip is will support conservation. Many of the safari groups are starting the programs like we have, working with the villages in their area. It's just wonderful. It's a web.
It is amazing. And who hasn't heard of Google? Unless you've been living under a rock, everybody knows Google. And the fact that they're reaching out and helping the nonprofits is –
I wasn't even aware of this program at all.
Yeah, and, so and they found us. They must have researchers because they found us at the Atlanta Business Radio Show and sent us the information.
Wow.
And hopefully we can get out to lots of folks.
We will get out. We know a lot of nonprofits between us.
Yes, we do.
They probably have like a studio view on Google Maps, you know.
you do. You kind of picture them above everything, looking down. Wow, terrific. Gosh, I could talk to these folks all day long, but we've got to get going.
We got your website right, Mary?
Yes, I didn't know anything about the internet when I designed this. owens-foundation.org. I would have left that hyphen out had I understood, but.
Well, Mary, you've come a long way.
I have.
You're doing good work, so.
Yes, you are. Thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you, Google Grants. And until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.